know what, man, they hit you on Facebook, they hit you on YouTube, they hit you on Twitter. Why not Skype too, man? These guys all over the place, these anarchists running these social media giants.
Anarchists. Yeah, I was wondering as I was listening to your rants how it is that YouTube hasn't banned you.
Well, it's because the ranting points get put in my Facebook feed. I don't put it on YouTube because they don't play it.
Well, then Facebook would ban you. I'm sitting here going, how is he surviving? But hey, and I'm glad you're providing that degree of energy. I'm not sure I could keep up with you.
Well, I'll tell you what. That's what they pay me for, Dr. Ted, man. You know, there can only be one Highlander. There can only be one Cosmic Cowboy, and we're riding high tonight. In fact, it could be what's contained in this cup. I always say it's coffee. There's other things could be in there as well.
Well, I settle for a cup that says the greatest grandpa ever. So.
Well, are you?
My grandkids think so, and that's good enough for me.
Okay.
Nobody else's opinion counts.
That is right. Dr. Ted, welcome back to the program. So good to have you back. And tonight we're going to be doing a twofer with you. First hour, just letting everybody know, and of course we've already talked about it, that we're going to be talking about the new Greendale. I don't know what happened to the old one, but I guess there is an old one. And the second hour we'll be talking about the opioid crisis, which is near and dear to my heart there as well. It's affected my family. So we're going to be talking about it. Let's get into it, Dr. Ted. You have podcasts and various things, and I've listened to numbers of them. But this new Green Deal, is it just simply a bunch of kids running around saying we got to save the environment, or is it something more sinister?
Depends on how you look at it. You have a number of supposedly reasonable senators and Congress critters who have decided to sign on to it, and they are presumably using some portion of a brain, although, you know, when you look at the actual numbers and so on, that's open to serious question. Because the finances are horrible. Just to give you an idea, if I look at this, just the cost of rebuilding all of the buildings in the United States is something on the order of $7 trillion. That's just to start with. The price tag for Medicare for All is $32.6 trillion by the best numbers I've seen. Money, well, the problem we've got is the left doesn't subscribe to the idea that you have to have money to pay out money. They subscribe to something called new monetary theory, which basically says if we don't have enough money, we print some. We'll be just fine. Mm-hmm. If you go look up hyperinflation on Wikipedia, you will find 16 countries that have tried that. And those 16 countries, you know, include places like the Weimar Republic, they include Venezuela, and on and on. And not one of them has come close to survival. Mm. Venezuela is a great example right now. You have a so-called socialist state, and what they've done is what socialism always does. They are the absolute authoritarians. Mm-hmm. You have to do this. You have to do that. And if we look at the Green New Deal, we are going to, it says we're securing clean air and water. The way we're going to do all of this is we'll take the first one, upgrade all existing buildings and constructing new buildings to achieve maximum energy and water efficiency. What's maximum? How do you know? Mm-hmm. Okay. It's a meaningless number because nobody knows what the maximum is. But if you just look at the number of housing units there are in the United States, and these are back of the envelope calculations. If you assume an average household has four people in it, which Ozzie and Harriet and what were the kids' names?
Wait a minute now. I wasn't born then. I'm only like 30.
Oh, well.
Ricky and Davey.
Boy, I'm glad you got it because I wouldn't have gotten it.
I'm just that smart.
At any rate, and of course, nowadays you don't have Ozzie and Harriet because Harriet has to work to pay Ozzie's taxes, but that's a separate question. At any rate, so if we say we have an average of four people in a household, that's 82 million households. Now, some are in apartments, some are in houses. It doesn't make a whole lot of difference. With 82 million, if you're going to replace just the housing, forget about police stations, hospitals, businesses, grocery stores, anything else. Forget about all the rest of that. Just the housing. Let's look at our construction force. By the time you look at the people who are actually swinging the hammers and the people who are running the lumber yard and all of that stuff, mm-hmm. you got about 1.6 million people in that business today. Okay? And if you then say, well, we got to replace 82 million households in 10 years, that's 8.2 a year. We're doing 1.25 a year now, so we have to multiply this by almost 7.
Wow.
The math is basically by time you're done, you're taking a huge number of people and putting them to work in housing alone. And how many did I say was working? I missed it by a factor of 10. It's 16 million that are working there. Let me walk through, double check my numbers here. There are 10.7 million construction workers and 8.4 million production workers. With 1.25 million housing starts, we'd have to end up with, instead of 19.1 million workers, we need 125.3 million workers just for housing. Now remember, for the left, they can print all the money they want. Mm-hmm. They can't print people. Mm. We have 161 million people in the workforce today. That includes doctors, which fortunately I'm retarded now, but
well, I wasn't going to say that, but good.
No. I got to give you one. People ask me how I'm doing. I tell them I'm dazed, confused, and prone to wandering.
Okay.
But the fact is, you'd have to look at the doctors, the nurses, the police, the people who run the grocery store, the people who run the gas station. Well, wait, no, there won't be any gas stations. The people who run the plug-in electric vehicle stations, they have to build all of those. You take all of those people. You can't do the job just for houses. There aren't enough people. And the problem we have is, as you look at the left, and I'm quoting now from Scott Adams' book, Win Bigly. And he says, quote, "On all the important stuff, we are emotional creatures who make decisions first and rationalize them after the fact." Translation: this feels good. Now I got to figure out a way so that when I say it feels good and I want to do it, I've got to figure out the words to convince myself that it's an okay thing to do. And that's the way most people in this country behave. If you listen to Mike Cernovich, for example, he uses the term sheeple. And 90%+ of all people are sheep. But because they're people, they are sheeple. So when you look at it, most people look with strictly their emotions. They don't take the time to do any analysis. So what we have to do is figure out a way to reach the reachable and get an idea through that makes sense. And I'm not about to let them take my steak dinner. I mean, I'm going to have a cow that farts.
Whoa.
And, you know, the problem they've got, and one of their goals, you like this, and I'm reading from the Congressional Research Service summary of the Green New Deal resolution. They want to, let me find the securing clean air and water, climate and community resiliency, healthy food. Okay? Healthy food, my ass. Those people have no clue what healthy is. Mm-hmm. We were taught the food pyramid. Anybody remember that?
Oh.
So we buy low-fat cottage cheese, and we buy low-fat yogurt and low-fat milk and low-fat whatever. And what happens? America has an epidemic of obesity because we've gone low-fat with high carbs. And I'm going to put in a plug for Dr. Jason Fung's book, The Obesity Code, and his companion book, The Diabetes Code. Mm-hmm. Get them, read them, learn them. All of the studies clearly show that a high-fat, low-carb diet is good for you. Low-fat, high-carb is bad for you. It creates type 2 diabetes, which creates strokes, heart attacks, and all of those other problems. Matter of fact, you wouldn't need to even have statins if everybody was on a high-fat, low-carb diet.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they want to get rid of one of the best sources of a high-fat diet, animal protein mixed with animal fats.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, the type of fats that are here, animal fats, which are your best ones, you know, you have lard, suet, butter. Those are the best fats because they're very high in saturated fats.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the polyunsaturated fats that they told us were good that actually are clogging your coronaries.
Well, when you said lard, I don't know why. I thought about Stacey Abrams. But I'll tell you what, Dr. all right, got a question from Georgia because we're talking about housing now. Are they going to replace housing with FEMA camps?
Oh my goodness!
I like that question.
Somebody's got to build all of those FEMA trailers. You know, where are you going to get the people to build all of those? And you know, where are you going to house all of the people who are having their houses rebuilt? I mean, I don't want somebody to kick me out of my house. Well, they decide they're going to rebuild it. This is called authoritarianism. Mm-hmm. They scream about Trump being an authoritarian, but an authoritarian says, you will do as I say.
Mm-hmm.
And this is totally backwards to the purpose of law. Law's purpose is to tell us where we can't go because it's unsafe. And that should be the small areas. And if you're not in that area, you're cool. What they're doing with law is we're going to tell you where you have to go. And by the way, you have to have permission while you're at it.
Hmm. Well, according to that financial brain trust, AOC, the way that you pay for this new Green Deal is you just pay for it. And I think that is a tremendously – I mean, I can't even get up to that level of knowledge on economics, doctor. So why wouldn't that work? You just pay for it.
Okay, you realize that when I write a check, let's say I'm buying a $30,000 car, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I hand the dealer, forget about the mechanics of it, but I hand the dealer $30,000, he hands me the keys.
Okay.
Okay, that $30,000 represents work that I did, people paid me for. It's the grease that makes commerce work. But if you just simply put more buckets of grease out there, I have to hand over more buckets of grease, and pretty soon we're all sliding on our ass.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is no limit. Venezuela is exactly what happens. They've got over 1,000,000% inflation. Why? They're printing money with more zeros. Because, well, we need more money. That's called the new monetary theory, and that's where the left is working. Part of the problem is many are Republicrats. Most of the people in D.C. are Republicrats.
Mm-hmm.
Have spent like drunken sailors, but as Ronald Reagan says, that's unfair to drunken sailors because the drunken sailors are spending their own money. And we have built up a $22 trillion deficit, and we haven't crashed yet. We've had people screaming we're about to be in trouble since we hit $5 trillion,
mm-hmm.
and maybe before that. And so it's getting to be a Chicken Little situation. They're saying it really won't happen. So, you know, we have a problem now. We can't convince them on that, but we have to hit them with the reality that you want to do this. There aren't enough people to do this. You want to do everything with renewables. Well, hydroelectric is a renewable, but it's maxed out.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have enough rivers with proper geography to put more dams up.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, that would get in the way of migrating fish. So the green can't do it. And, by the way, the reason that they want to go green sounds like good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they both start with G, so the green must be good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the quality of thinking they've got. But hydro's maxed out. You want to do solar?
And Gator Ginsburg. Good. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I forgot about the notorious RBG on that count.
Okay.
We can talk about that later if you want. At any rate, there's not enough capacity for solar. You just can't physically do it because, among other things, who's going to build all of those solar panels? Think about the things that go into the solar panels. Rare earth materials. Mm-hmm. What about the batteries that those have to feed? Lead's toxic.
Dr. Ted, isn't there a massive project going up? I thought it was Vermont. 3,500 acres, supposed to be the world's largest solar field, but they're going over rivers and streams and protected areas, and it's like, who cares? We're going to build that. It's like, wait a minute, I thought you guys are the same thing with the windmills. I think more bald eagles have been killed by windmills than, and you know, if you kill one, you go to jail and a $10,000 fine. But if you hit it with a wind generator, then you're good. I don't get, what's up with that?
You know, this is in rational thinking, that's called cognitive dissonance. But that assumes that there is cognition on that side because they are incapable of seeing that if I push this idea, it contradicts that idea. They can't see the contradiction. Oh, this one's good. That one's good. There is nothing more detailed than simply saying it's as thick as that sheet of paper. They never get any deeper than that. Mm-hmm. They just can't do it because they're not thinking. And what they're doing, Paul Joseph Watson did a piece a while back on YouTube where he was talking about non-player characters. And basically, he had a routine that went something like this. I am character number 24875. I agree with everything that you are saying, and I have always agreed with everything that you are saying. Therefore, you should vote for me.
Wow.
And what he's really pointing out is our Democrat leaders aren't leaders at all. And I've published some pieces on the fact that these people are as much turncoats to their original views as they ever were. Mm-hmm. Dianne Feinstein's a good one. Mm-hmm. When she was early in California legislative activity and then when she was first in the Senate, she was just 100% opposed to gay marriage. Now she's totally in the tank for it.
Hey, I'll tell you what, Dr. Ted, I'll give you one that's just right in the forefront now. Back in the 70s, they pushed the idea of Roe versus Wade to protect, quote, women's rights because they didn't want people in back alleys with coat hangers going in there, unlicensed professionals, unlicensed people, non-doctors, performing abortions. So therefore, we've got to codify it. We've got to make it legal. We've got to get them into the hospitals. So that was then. Today, it's like they're passing laws in these Democrat states. Anybody with a coat hanger, you don't have to have a license. You don't have to be a doctor. You don't have to be in a hospital. Mm-hmm. Any way you want to rip that thing out with a coat hanger, they're right back where they were back in the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you a story. I live in Florida, where abortion is legal. It's a restriction or two, but basically it's legal. I practiced critical care medicine for a while, and I got a consult on a 15-year-old girl who was just sicker than anything you could believe. She was in what we called septic shock. And the story was she had come in, she had an ectopic pregnancy. That's a pregnancy in her tube. Okay. And that's typically a complication of what we call pelvic inflammatory disease. She's been playing around with all kinds of extra people and got infected with something and scarred things up and the egg got stuck. So it's growing out there. Well, the surgeon, the OB-GYN, took it out, should have been fine. She goes to recovery room and she just crashes. I get called a couple of days later because the other docs are just, they have no idea what they can do. This is as bad as it gets. So we went and dug through it. Long story short, she went down the tubes and died. But here's the punchline. What the hospital did in trying to defend against the suit that came out of this, they sent a detective out and discovered that, in fact, this 15-year-old girl in a state where abortion is legal had a back alley abortion, and she knew she was pregnant, didn't realize it was in the tube, back alley abortion, got infected from that, and that killed her.
Wow.
So all of that argument of abortion is garbage. Plus, abortion is not now and never has been healthcare.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's healthcare, nor does it seem like family planning, because if you were doing family planning, you wouldn't have the baby to begin with.
Exactly.
And, interestingly enough, Donald Trump's done something about defunding a little bit, at least a little bit of Planned Parenthood.
Yeah,
but
it was a nice move.
Yeah, it is some nice moves. It's almost as fun as when he canceled Nancy Pelosi's flight. I mean, that was hysterical, man.
That was a brilliant piece of trolling.
Yeah, so yeah, that, you know, you can't out-troll Trump, and people have tried and tried, and they just can't do it. But so, all right, now we've got a couple questions here. Doreen out of the YouTube chat says, what fat is good to eat?
Basically, any of the animal fats are good. Monounsaturated fats such as olive oil, palm oil, avocado oil, and coconut oil, those are all good. Mm-hmm. Your ones absolutely avoid all of the vegetable oils. If it's not one of those four I listed and it's liquid at room temperature, leave it on the store shelf.
Mm-hmm.
Because those are all polyunsaturated, which is a chemical structure that breaks down into bad stuff real easy.
Mm-hmm. You know, the original Green Deal that was on AOC's website, they took it down immediately. First of all, they blamed the Republicans, saying they hacked it. They hacked their website and put that up there. And then somebody did the meta search on the data, the metadata search, and it went right back to her campaign manager. Then they came back and said, no, it was the Russians. They put that up there. But, of course, you mentioned earlier that, you know, she wants to eliminate cow farts, and she wants to eliminate planes. She wants people to take a train to Hawaii and various things like that. And everybody's supposed to be driving a Fred Flintstone car when she gets done. But you know, then you mentioned the wonderful world of Venezuela socialism, which they like to impart or foist on the rest of us. But as far as the cows go, they're because they must be in the forefront of climate change remedies, because they've already eliminated all the cows, because they've already ran into the fields and ate the cows. And of course, they've ate the zoo animals. They've ate their dogs. I don't think there's anything left. So in that case there, her plan seems to be working. They've ate the cows. And so they got to be lowering the climate emissions down there in Venezuela.
I wish I had thought of that. That is just a brilliant way of pointing out the stupidity of what's going on. And that's why I call her Alexandria Airhead Cortez.
I call her minus cerebral cortex Cortez. All right. Doug White says, this is kind of a monetary question. What happens if the debt gets canceled? I don't know. Did we address that, or was that something you'd like to address?
We haven't talked about the debt. And if we're going to wander in that direction, I'll do a small amount of speculation.
Okay.
We know that a large amount of the debt is held by big banks and by the Federal Reserve. And who is the Federal Reserve? We know who the Fed governors are, but who is it? Who owns it? It's big banks in some fashion. I don't know the detailed specifics. But the fact is, they insist on inflating the currency by 2 to 3% a year, which means that's a 2 to 3% tax on every person in the country going straight into the bank's pockets. And if we were to eliminate all of the debt held by the Federal Reserve, the only people who are likely to be hurt would be people with multiple zeros after their net worth.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wouldn't have to worry about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we could simply say, you already got yours. You're not getting any more.
Dr. Ted, are you aware of the billboard that was put up in New York City that said, thanks a lot, AOC, for losing 25?
Yeah, I saw that on the pre-show. That's cool.
Do you know there's an update to that?
Oh, no. Tell me about the update.
Well, AOC responded to them, called them, you know, money hungry, this and that and the other. So that Jobs Network put another sign, billboard, right on top of that. It goes up and down. It's just above that billboard. And it said, AOC, this is real. I just saw it before I got on air. I didn't get a chance to grab it. It said, AOC, we saw your comment and it's whack. So they're trying to relate to her. The only way that I can relate or explain things to AOC, I got to go find my Etch-a-Sketch, and then maybe I can communicate with her. You know, I feel like that may be the only way that I can do it.
Oh, my goodness. The problem is she cannot hear. And this is the problem with the left. They simply cannot hear. We can look at 100 examples. Kavanaugh's hearing is a good one. They could not hear that there is no evidence. No evidence just means we need to look harder.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's really what it means.
Mm-hmm. All right. Here's another question for you. This is from Guest 279. Can you run a tractor on renewables?
In theory, you can. Okay. I fly, and one of the things that's been working recently for pilots is a fuel that's called Swift Fuel, and the basic idea is that it's made from grass or something else. There's a special process to do it, and presumably you could do something similar to what we get with what's called biodiesel. So there's no reason that you couldn't do it. One of the curious things of biodiesel is that many times when you run it in an engine, it smells like French fries. Mm-hmm. But
now I noticed they call it the new Green Deal. Now, when Barry Obama got in there, he tried to roll out some kind of Green Deal. Okay, he sent hundreds of millions of dollars to Solyndra for a bogus mm-hmm. solar plant, and that solar company renegotiated the deal right after they signed it and said, if we just so happen to file bankruptcy, all of our people get paid and the taxpayer gets stuck with the bill. Was that supposedly the original Green Deal? Is that what you're talking about, the new Green? Hers is better than that?
Actually, the name Green New Deal comes from the Green Party website, and it's picked up there. But actually, this is the New Deal for Green. That's what it really is. And your example is perfect. The idea here is we're going to tell you what to do. We're going to pick your pocket for it, and we're going to line the pockets of our favored friends. That's really what it's about. Mm-hmm. And then our favored friends will put money in our campaign coffers, and we'll get reelected. We'll do more of it. We'll do more of it. And remember, the world runs on sex, money, and power. If you have money, you can probably get the other two. Mm-hmm. And power is the ultimate aphrodisiac. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know,
there's a conceit that runs through the left, which we have to remember. They think they're smarter than we are. The Mitchell Trio had in 1966, I believe it was, put out an album called Slightly Irreverent, and on it they had a sequence called Rhymes for the Irreverent. I've used this on my podcast on VidZet. A real simple little rhyme. No matter how high or great the throne, what sits on it is the same as your own.
Wow. I'm going to put that to music, man.
Well, you can get the album, and it's just a little spoken thing with a little music behind it. But the basic idea is, hey, they're the same as you. They just happen to be mm-hmm. sitting on a different chair.
Well, I'm sure the people there at Solyndra ended up, they contributed to the DNC website, or the DNC anyway, but it kind of reminds me, if you go all the way back, the $5 billion healthcare website, that went to Michelle Obama's buddy in college, you know, it's like,
yep.
How do you come up with $5 billion for a website? Well, because they're following the money, just like Planned Parenthood does. We give them $560 million, they could put $60 million back in a campaign for the Democrats.
And exactly. And how is it that Airhead Cortez, who went up to D.C. penniless, now is wearing expensive clothes and living in a high rent apartment?
Huh.
Now, give me a break. She hasn't been there but a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Who's paying for all of that stuff?
Well, how does a socialist like Bernie Sanders have three houses?
Oh, yes.
And I'm sure there's a bunch of illegals like to go stay with him, man, and tell him what for. Here's a question for you. Does the deep state have free energy? I think what they're saying is there free energy and they're just hiding it from us because they can make a lot more money by not letting it out?
Oh, I understand the question because I thought we were talking about a physics concept on free energy. No, the basic idea what you're saying is there, and this was the classic thing, well, we've got the 100 mile per gallon carburetor and that sort of thing. The answer is no. And this is one of the things that free markets do. If somebody's got the better mousetrap, the world does beat a path to their door because you can do enough better, they're going to pay you for it, and it'll come. And I've heard these conspiracy theory things forever and ever. I just don't believe that there's anything hiding out there.
Mm-hmm.
For what it's worth, I'm involved in a research project that could come up with something, but that's pure physics that we're working with. Mm-hmm.
So I guess we shouldn't go down the rabbit trail that the aliens have the technology and they haven't given it to us yet.
I'll let you go down that pathway on your own.
Somehow I feel like I've been down there a number of times. All right. Sneaker asked this question. Doctor, are you a fan of pharmaceutical companies?
That might be
for
complex.
The second hour, but go ahead.
It's a much more complicated question than it sounds like.
Let's address that in the second hour, because we're going to be talking about the opioid crisis. I want to finish up with the green here. So they're backtracking on the green. So what they're doing is do you think they played their hand a little bit too quickly? Obviously, they got power. They're changing everything they can as fast as they can. Mm-hmm. Do you think they slipped up on that? But we all know that's where they really want to go.
The word I hear is that Airhead Cortez is being told to tone it down. You're making us look too crazy. And
I don't know,
so
that's possible.
That would fit with the speculation that they played their hand too early.
Mm-hmm. Is she running, her and Omar, are they running the Democrat Party? Or is Pelosi?
No. Remember what Paul Joseph Watson said. Most of them are non-player characters. The Democrat Party is answering to the loudest, craziest people in the street. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to say, look, we've always believed this, therefore you should support us. Mm-hmm. It's not that the Democrats honestly believe it, except for a few idiots like Airhead Cortez. Mm-hmm. Most of them are saying, I hear all of this in the street. It's loud. The echo chamber in the mainstream media is pushing it. Therefore, I will sign on as I've been a lifetime supporter.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where they go. They are, if you look at it within DC itself, DC is its own ecosystem. And while they reach outside to make sure that they can stay alive as their own ecosystem, they are looking at how can I take a place of power? What can I do to be the most powerful person? And you look, my Congress critter, Stephanie Murphy, is now on the Ways and Means Committee. And she's very much a left winger. You know, what are you going to do? She's working her way up in the power structure.
Mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton was pretty bold in her run-up, saying that she was going to eliminate coal right across from a coal miner's face. Obviously, that they want to go back to that. Do you see that's going to happen in the near future? Or is there enough normal people in this country to prevent that?
I think there are enough normal people to prevent it. The problem is, on the Republican side, you've got too many wishy-washies. You have a whole lot of never-Trumpers, and you have an ecosystem within itself. It's the D.C. ecosystem, which is unwilling to stand up and say, here are the principles we stand for. It's unwilling, and even it surprises me that Donald Trump hasn't picked this up. The American dream, and I'm going to give it to your audience, and we spread it far and wide. The American dream can be stated as following. The American dream is the idea that you can bust your butt to make a better life for yourself and not have it stolen by anyone, not even the government.
Mm.
That's the American dream. If we can get enough people to preach that, all of a sudden we have a 60-40 majority.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is we have way too many people who aren't willing to stand up and boldly say things. That's what Scott Adams is talking about in Win Bigly.
Mm-hmm.
Trump is bold, and he knows how to say things that make people think about his issues. Mm-hmm. Because his issue isn't the wall. His issue is border security. But he talks about the wall, which can get fact-checked and get Pinocchios and everything else, but people are now talking border security.
Mm-hmm. He does seem to be a master of that. And I've always said that he seems to have this uncanny ability to hold out a shiny object, and then the swamp will just gravitate towards that like a firebug to a bug zapper, and he zaps them, man. I mean, you know, it's really fun to watch. He pretty much does it every time. Look here, Nancy Pelosi said not $1 for the wall ever, and everybody thought that was just encased in solid stone, rock solid. She's got the power. She's wearing that little pin on there, so proving she's got power. And now he's got over $1 billion. Out of her.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, that didn't work.
No, I understand it. And, you know, he didn't get as much as he had originally had, but he made his point. and people are going to remember that he stood up and fought for it. And when they refused to get on board for true security, he said, okay, here's the emergency. And oh, by the way, we're already building the wall because I've dedicated certain monies to it. Mm-hmm. And there are half a dozen other places I can get money. I'll spend your $1.5 billion. Mm-hmm. I'll live with your rules you put on it for that $1.5 billion. But guess what? On drug corridors, I've got a bunch of money in the Justice Department I can do there. I have all of that money that's been seized. And, oh, I'm going to get another $14 or $16 billion from El Chapo. That money goes into the forfeiture fund and then goes to put wall in the drug corridors through the Department of Justice. Mm-hmm. So he's got a lot going on, and he's going to get a lot more done than they're expecting. Mm-hmm. Plus, I saw a video with this last week that points out that there are many places where he is actually having multiple loops of razor wire go up so that you functionally have a wall even though you haven't built the big one.
Mm-hmm. In our bear report, I don't know if you ever watched this show, but before I do my rainy points, we call up the bear. And his report yep. was today was about, I think it was Oregon, trying to get 16-year-olds to vote. It's clear there may be more normal people in this country than we think. And I'm glad you said that you think there's more normal people. But, you know, they're trying to get the besides the babies they kill, they were going to try to give them a vote for it and then kill them. But you know, the 16-year-olds, the criminals, the illegal aliens, dead people. I don't think they don't seem like they have really enough people, you know, and then the rest of it, they seem like they own the voting machines. So and you know, here's something else you just said earlier, Ted, that they think they are smarter than us. Bill Maher just said the other day on one of his shows that the red states are dumb, backward people, but the blue is where all the money is, you know. And I was like, wait a minute, got Trump elected, so who's smarter?
Statistically on the money, he's right. But that has to do with the banking and some of the large companies. And then idiots like Tom Steyer and who's the Starbucks guy? Schultz. You know, and George Soros. You know, these people have made mammoth amounts of money. And they made it by being good at what they're doing. And they have just thrown away what they learned coming up. So the money is distributed more in the blue states, no question about it. But it doesn't say that the others are dumb in any fashion.
Well, I can't say they're that dumb because they got their man elected who's a complete novice.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I don't know. I don't think the red staters are that dumb. They managed to get him elected and they just went berserk on that. But you mentioned the border and drugs coming up there, Ted. That kind of segues into the opioid crisis. Now, how are you involved? What do you do related to that?
Okay. I'm an anesthesiologist. I am retired. I practiced anesthesiology and private medicine for 32 years. Add the 4 years of my residency in, so I've got 36 years of experience. I think I know what I'm talking about. And if you don't mind, let's see if I can do that. I don't know if I can do that as easily as I want to do it here. Yeah, I can do this.
Okay.
I want to share a screen with people. Let me bring this across and see if I can share a screen. Because I want to show fiddlesticks. It's not letting me show the table. Okay, I guess I'll have to do without it. But
well, if you have a screenshot and you want to send it, if you can real quick. Otherwise, we just listen to what you have to say.
Okay. Let's see what we get here. See if it does what I wanted it to do.
Okay.
Doesn't look like it's doing it.
Yeah, we can see it, but it's a little blurry.
Okay. There's a table in here. You can see that. Let me zoom it up a bit. Come over here. Is that a little better?
Slightly, yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. This is a table from an article I wrote for the NOQ report. And basically what I did was compare narcotics. As an anesthesiologist, it would be almost impossible for me to practice without narcotics. Now, by the way, I'm using narcotic in the medical sense. We talk about opioids. And opioids are narcotics, pure and simple. When people talk about methamphetamine or cocaine as narcotics, they're not. Narcotic and opioid is the same. And here's a long list of them. and you'll see morphine, heroin, dilaudid, methadone, and so on. These are the first four are the long-acting ones. And you'll notice they have well-defined potencies. That is, if I give 10 milligrams of morphine for somebody for pain after surgery, I only need to give 5 of heroin or 2 of dilaudid. And by the way, you realize that heroin was originally, let me find it real quick here, was originally marketed in 1895 by Bayer, the aspirin people, as an over-the-counter market drug. And now we have it on our medical formularies as diamorphine. Its chemical structure is diacetylmorphine. You take vinegar, dump it on morphine, you get heroin.
Wow.
That's basically what you get. When I look at them, you can see we have well-defined potency. We have well-defined duration. We know how long they last. And as a practical matter, every one of those drugs in, well, it's not highlighting for me, but here we are, fentanyl. Sound familiar?
Of course.
Fentanyl is 100 times as potent as morphine. But the advantage of fentanyl, it lasts on average about 40 minutes. I administered in my career gallons of fentanyl. It is one of the safest drugs known to man. The reason it's safe is because it is exceedingly potent. And when a drug becomes more potent, that means it is more specific for its receptor. That means it will have fewer side effects. What are the side effects we see with every narcotic, basically? You have respiratory depression. That's what kills people with overdoses. They quit breathing. They all tend to cause nausea, but they are all what we call idiosyncratic. That means that I might have a problem with morphine, but if you give me dilaudid, I don't have a problem because I don't get as nauseated with it. Mm-hmm. It's personality. The difference between these drugs is garbage. They're all the same drug. Let me say that again. Every one of those drugs is the same drug in practical usage. The difference is how I give it and how long it lasts.
Wow.
That is the difference. Okay, let me ditch the screen sharing. How do I do that? Let's
get back online now.
Okay, we're online now.
Mm-hmm.
You see me now?
You are back in the picture.
Okay.
That worked pretty good.
Okay. I got four screens up here, so I have to be careful what's going where, what I drug around where.
Good for you. But let me get you this question here, Dr. Ted, from Doreen. She says, why do they blame doctors for prescribing these opioids?
Okay. This is a very big problem that we've got. And the problem is the reporting. We know absolutely without question from multiple studies that less than 1% of drug addiction in this country comes from prescribed drugs. Less than 1%. Yet in my home state of Florida, we, this last session, passed a law that said doctors cannot prescribe for longer than 3 days. I sat down with my representative and said, look, here are the papers I want you where we can look at it. Here's my qualifications. I'll come up and testify in front of your committee. This whole proposal is idiotic. Yet they did it anyway. It's just plain nuts.
Okay. How much of the pharmaceutical company is behind any of this?
Okay. Now, let's take a look at what pharmaceutical companies are in business for. They're in business to sell their product, just like Ford and Chevy are in the business of selling cars. So what they want to do is have the newest, latest, and greatest product. Methadone, for example, was developed in order to have a non-addictive narcotic. Turns out it didn't work. It's an addictive narcotic. They're simply trying to do that. They went to oxycodone. Supposedly this was going to be better. Turns out oxycodone, you saw it on the table, same as all of the others, narcotics are narcotics. That's the way it sits. They're all the same drug. And so drug companies have tried to find something different. And they've tried to market it, say, my drug's better than your drug, you know. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to make money. And maybe they had some lax controls here and there. But the basic thing is they're not making their big money from narcotics. You know how much it costs to make any one of those narcotics? No. Less than aspirin. The native production cost of narcotics is pennies. And you have some marketing, or I should say you have some packaging and distribution costs. But even in the hospital with crazy stuff, a dose of morphine is maybe $3. It's not much. And all of these others are running the same way. These drugs are cheap. And so the drug companies aren't getting rich off of this. They're getting rich off of things like statins, which if we were on a – I always said this before. If we were on the right diet, nobody would need statins. Those are the big blockbuster drugs. And they're new diabetes drugs. Those are the ones that make money for them. But it's not that they're out trying to make addicts. As a matter of fact, even the curbside pharmacist isn't trying to make to overdose anybody. He's trying to get customers. And he wants his customers to live as long as they can. But they die, and you put the graph up there a minute ago on how rapidly they're dying. Last year we had 72,000 opioid overdose deaths. What kills people with overdoses? It's not fentanyl. Well, okay, let me put this in proper language. Fentanyl is part of the drug cocktail that killed them. Okay, mm-hmm. That's called a proximate cause. They injected a set of drugs. They died. That's called proximate cause. The problem is, oh, that's a great graphic. The ultimate cause is where we have to address things. And the fact is that the ultimate cause has nothing to do with the narcotics themselves. As I showed you, they're all very well characterized. They're all very safe drugs. They're not the problem. What is it that kills if I inject a mix of narcotics and I die from the overdose? What actually killed me? Any idea?
No.
The thing that killed me is I didn't know what it was I was injecting. I was getting a hit. And as a narcotic addict, I need to make sure that I get my drugs so I avoid the abstinence syndrome. That's called withdrawal. Because it's ugly, it's horrible, and so I have to get a hit to avoid that. But I don't know what the guy on the right-hand street corner is selling. He says it's good stuff, and I got a dose from him before, and I was okay, so maybe I'll do it again. But maybe the guy on the left-hand street corner's got the better stuff. You have competition. What's actually going on here is something called a risk premium. This is a concept in economics, which says, how much am I willing to put up? How much am I willing to lose in order to make my profit? How much am I willing to risk? And in the case of opioids, it works this way. Opioids are dirt cheap. If they were available, decriminalized, any addict could supply himself for less than the price of a latte a day. As a matter of fact, Portugal has been showing this for 15 years. They decriminalized opioids. They have opioid maintenance programs that cost the government pays for them. Mm-hmm. Cost the government $4 a day per addict. They have the lowest overdose rate in Europe. Their overdose rate is less than one-tenth of ours. And they find that over a period of years, half of the addicts wean themselves off. And they think about this. You and I both know people who are dependent on drugs. Notice I used a different word. That's physiologic dependence. who carry out productive lives, people with chronic back pain who go to work every day and do things. It's a classic example. The addict is psychologically dependent. He's not physiologically dependent, but the body reacts the same way ultimately. The addict, you know, we have to deal with him a little differently, but decriminalization is what we need. Not restricting doctors, because doctors aren't creating addicts. The doctors who ran the pill mills in Florida that we heard about in 2 or 3 years ago, why were they running a pill mill? They could make money at it because laws said it's illegal. You make something that people want illegal. Mm-hmm. There's a bad guy out there who says, oh, I can make a profit on it. So he supplies it. And the guy who says, oh, I want it, well, if I'm going to pay your price, you know, I'm taking this risk, you better give me good stuff. And he says, okay, if I have to give you the good stuff, you're going to pay this much. And you get this vicious cycle going. And then the guy on the left street corner starts competing with the guy on the right street corner for your business. And heroin has a known potency. Well, let me spice it up with a little fentanyl. I'll give you a better hit. You see what happens. The result in last year was 72,000 dead Americans, all a direct traceable result of prohibition, which all began back, oh my goodness, William Randolph Hearst, yellow journalism. He created the myth of the opium fiend in his newspapers. This came during the Chinese immigration for the Transcontinental Railroad. Those men would work 6 days. They go into the local shantytown, smoke their opium, just have a basic good time with each other, sleep it off, come back to work. Everything's fine. They never bothered anybody. But he created the myth of the opium fiend. And as a means of racial suppression, opium got outlawed. Ultimately, that passes through the Harrison Narcotics Act, up to the Pure Food and Drug Act, up to making things Schedule One. It's curious, heroin is Schedule One, but diamorphine is same drug, Schedule Two. The difference? Who made it? Same drug.
You're talking about the countries that have been dealing with this crisis. In California, it seems they're banning straws. But some of those cities over there are filled, littered with plastic syringes where they're passing out syringes for people, and they're all over the streets. I don't get it. I thought they were against plastic. I don't know.
That's one of those incongruities that the left can't see.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get you another question here. Put Yahweh first from YouTube chat, because you know we have two going on here. What is Narcan, and how does it work against heroin?
Okay. Narcan, naloxone. There's another one, naltrexone. The Narcan is an injectable drug. Now, let me back up for a minute. If I give you a dose of any of those opioids, they work by occupying a receptor on the cell membrane. Okay? They are essentially a key that goes in a lock.
Okay. See that?
Naloxone is more potent at binding to that lock. It knocks the narcotic off of the receptor and then binds tightly to the receptor. Now, the problem with naloxone is it only lasts 30 minutes. And if you took a hit of heroin, heroin lasts 3 to 4 hours. So you can wake up, do well, and 30 minutes later you've fallen back to sleep because the naloxone's gone now and the heroin is still there. Naltrexone just lasts longer. Naloxone should be readily available, no question about it. It is a drug that if I were to give you a massive overdose of it right now, assuming that you weren't on opioids for your horrible back, you wouldn't notice anything. It wouldn't do anything.
Wow.
Now, what's interesting is, you probably know some marathoners and so on, these guys who do these huge athletic things, and there's a thing called the runner's high.
Okay.
You give somebody who's feeling the runner's high a dose of naloxone, and they'll punch you in the face because you took away their runner's high.
Wow.
The runner's high works through something called endorphins. Mm-hmm. And that is, those are proteins that are named for endogenous morphine. It's basically morphine your body makes. And so when you get the runner's high, you're releasing endorphins, and those are occupying those morphine receptors. Naloxone knocks them off the receptor.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, when I get off the elliptical trainer at the wellness center I go to, me and my wife go to, I feel pretty good after that. Is my body generating some of this stuff?
Absolutely.
I wonder if I could just, can I program my body to, like, generate it without me going working out?
That's a different question. I don't know how you'd do that.
Okay, well, I thought I'd ask, man. Hey, what about this? And you probably took this question before. Is kratom good? K-R-A-T-O-M.
Kratom. Hang on a minute. Let me go. I have read about it, but I don't have it on the tip of my tongue.
Well, I like to use the word kratom instead of that kratom because it reminds me of release the kratom. You know, I don't know. That's a kind of a thing there. But let's move on over here to this question here then. Oxycontin dates back to 1916, and in the years since, it has left a mark on society. Why hasn't it been unleashed for minor pain?
That's part of what we've got going on as the idea of we have a problem, therefore we must do something about it. Congress, let's go back to Jesse Smollett for a second. We had this report that they tried to lynch him. The next day, Congress passed an anti-lynching bill. There's something bad going on. We have to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of the merits, the way you make a mark in D.C. is I was part of the Sarbanes-Oxley bill. You know, I'm Paul Sarbanes, okay? I'm famous now for this. Mm-hmm. And every bill you run through, Dodd-Frank, you know, Barney Frank, his name is on that bill forever.
Yeah.
And this is how you do things. If you're able to get some bills passed, you now are somebody people looks to and says, well, maybe you ought to belong on this other committee or be appointed chairman or whatever else. Mm-hmm. That's the ecosystem in D.C., and there's no reason for any of these things to be banned. Hydrocodone? Which one were you talking about
there?
I forget.
Oxycontin is what the question was.
Yeah, why isn't it available? For the same reason none of the rest of them are available. We have a mindset in the government that we have to control. It's an authoritarian mindset, which is a natural outgrowth of all of the incentives in government.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm going to bring up one of the things I talk about frequently, the law of subsidy. When you subsidize something, you get more of it and it gets more expensive. Within D.C., by subsidizing something, what the subsidy actually is, if you've been successful, we subsidize you, you become the one we look to. And now you become more expensive, and we get more people chasing for it. If we look on the outside, on the drug problem, where is this a subsidy? Mm-hmm. Think about the industries that exist. We have militarized police to deal with drug busts. That is a subsidy to police. You know, we hand all of this equipment down to them. We hand all of this grant money down to them to get new people to go undercover for the druggies and on and on and on. We're subsidizing the police state. And what happens? When we subsidize it, we get more of it. Everybody finds another reason, well, I need some for this, and it gets more expensive. Who else makes money? Well, we wouldn't have a push for naloxone if we didn't do it, because there wouldn't be any need for it. If we went Portugal's way, there's basically no need for naloxone on the street. And yes, you have a few unscrupulous doctors who ran the pill mills. We subsidized them by making it illegal. We subsidized El Chapo by making drugs illegal. That $14 to $16 billion that we're going to seize from him,
mm-hmm,
just from his time in the Sinaloa cartel is a direct subsidy from American taxpayers to El Chapo as a result of making the drugs illegal. Who else gets subsidized? The rehab industry. Mm-hmm. Remember what I said happens in Portugal? In Portugal, you don't need a lot of rehab. There is some. If somebody really wants to go to rehab, they can. But most of the people who are on drugs, they put them on a methadone maintenance program. They get their drugs on a daily basis. There's no market for them because it's free to them. Anybody who says I'm an addict and can show any proof of it gets in, they get their drugs. And so there's no market. And there's almost no rehab out there. What do we have now? Well, we need to get all of these people into rehab to get them off drugs. No, you don't. Rehab is singularly awful. What's the success rate for rehab? Virtually 100% of people go into rehab dirty. They come out clean in theory, and within 6 months, about 90% of them are back dirty as they ever were. You know, 10% success rate? Any business who tried to have a business model like that would fail in a heartbeat. You know, you imagine you're running a car repair place and 90% of your cars come back because the repair was done wrong. But with our drug laws and with our Congress, we have to do something about it. We're subsidizing that industry. Think of all of the billions of dollars that are wasted every year because of this.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Ted, let me ask you something. Everyone has experienced pain. Unknown pain or mm-hmm. whatever, and then some people then maybe have chronic pain, and mm-hmm. and then they go to the doctor, and the doctor says, we don't know where it's coming from, and there's a prescription made. But in your estimation, where does these unknown pains come from?
I had a professor back in my residency who ran the pain clinic, and Lester Rumble, you walk in, you sit down in front of his desk, and the first thing you see is a big sign that says, the pain and strain is mainly in the brain. Now, he may have been overstating the case, but one of the things that we saw very commonly was something called secondary gain. And basically what this said was, you got this patient with this bizarre pain problem coming to you, and you can't really come up with any organic cause for it, and you start chasing it down, and this is a mother who is mistreated by her husband. She's got misbehaving kids. She has this horrible life. But if she is the victim of this horrible pain, then they will treat her better. That's called secondary gain. That sort of thing we saw on a very regular basis. So there's a fair number that fall into that category. Then there's pain we just can't understand. There are things that we just don't have a handle on. As we study more, we begin to learn more. And that's where the pain guys go to sort things out. Mm-hmm. So the problem with pain is the government decided it was a fourth vital sign. We had to record it. We had to treat it. And they put us in a catch-22, which said, if somebody's got pain that you don't treat it, you're practicing bad medicine. But if you're treating their pain, now you're practicing bad medicine because you're making them an addict. Mm-hmm. I mean, so doctors are stuck. They can't do anything right. Mm-hmm. And you really are scratching your head, what can I do? And sometimes the only answer is chronic maintenance on narcotics. And with these restrictions that are coming out now, there are a number of chronic pain patients who are committing suicide because they can't get their meds.
See, that's what I say. If there is anything, if anybody has chronic pain, I don't care how illegal it is. It's not somebody else's right to say you can't have this because we were in a back room somewhere making deals and we decided we're going to X that one off, and so that literally confines them to pain the rest of their life that can't be remedied. I say if somebody needs whatever pain medicine there is, I don't care what it's called, they should be able to get it.
Well, I agree with you, but now what we've got is a situation where there are so many people who are making a profit off of the drug business, off of the rehab business, off of the police side of it, mm-hmm. that even with the massive harm that this causes, they're not going to stand up and say, we'll go this way. They're not going to allow us to go that way. You see, what you presented is the classic libertarian view, with which I agree perfectly, that you own yourself. Mm-hmm. All of these regulatory approaches say the state owns you.
Yeah.
But now we're dealing with something called the Overton window. And that was named for the political theorist who described it, which says that there is a window of politically acceptable options for any question. And right now, decriminalization is not within the Overton window. It's too far out. But what we have to do is keep pointing out to people that what you're doing isn't working. As Einstein is supposed to have said, insanity is doing something a second time and expecting a different result.
Well, you know, the one going back to Trump, are you in agreement with his, I don't know if it's a bill or what it was called, but allowing people to have medicine that's not fully tested? Didn't he advance that?
That's a different question. And see, this is one of those things where you, once again, you own yourself. I should have the right to be stupid. And if a drug company is willing to release a particular drug to me, I have to sign a consent that says I understand there are risks in it, and these are the ones we know about. Mm-hmm. It's not tested. We don't know if it'll do me any good. If I'm willing to assume that risk, again, that's a legal doctrine called assumption of risk. If you get on a roller coaster at some entertainment, well, let me do a different one. You're going to go whitewater rafting. Nancy and I went to Alaska a year and a half ago.
Okay.
I went whitewater rafting. I had to sign a release that said they're not responsible. I assumed the risk. That is a legal doctrine, assumption of risk. What you'd be doing is the same thing, saying I am the one individually who is responsible if something bad happens. And also, in return for taking this medicine, I'm going to answer your questionnaire so you know what I had, my experience was, so you can factor that in later on. That's called a free market in ideas. It's a free market in individual responsibility, and it is a great idea. It's very different from saying the FDA knows all. Mm-hmm. And about 4 or 5 years ago, the FDA turned down the application for a new COX-2 inhibitor. Now, COX-2 inhibitors, you may have heard of Celebrex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a cyclooxygenase 2 inhibitor that's used for arthritis. Well, this other drug came in. It passed all of the tests. The committee said yes, and the director, the commissioner of the FDA said no. We will not approve it. There is no need for another COX-2 inhibitor in the market. What's that company going to do? They just flushed $10 billion down the drain doing all the development, and if they challenge this in court, by the way, there was no legal basis for this guy refusing. If they challenged it in court, what the FDA would do is to make their life so miserable that they'd never get another drug through, and the drugs they have would become too expensive to produce.
Yeah.
You can't fight City Hall because City Hall has too much power.
Yeah. Well, evidently what Trump did, they've been trying to do for years. I mean, I know people, it's legendary that Americans have been going overseas seeking test drugs to get some help, because this country's always seen, there's always some bureaucrat getting between the doctor and his patient. All right, here was a question for you. It says, this is from Gladys out of YouTube. Has there been any progress in pain meds developed from venomous sea creatures or terrestrial reptiles or anacrids?
To be honest, I don't know. Those are very choice places to look for new chemicals, because they tend to be things that haven't been tried before.
Okay.
They also bring up some stuff that some of the nefarious characters use. There are some toxins that come from those that will kill you with 1 microgram, and they'll kill you in under 10 minutes with no trace and cannot be detected. So, okay, you know, there's some bad stuff out there too.
Okay. Guest 4526 says, they suffer from severe chronic pain, multiple back surgeries. Is there anything I can take to ease the precedent withdrawals? I am Percocet withdrawals. I am now psychologically addicted after being back on them 4 years.
No, you're not psychologically addicted. You're physiologically dependent. And there is a difference. But what happens is, if you don't take a dose of drug at the appropriate time, you will get the withdrawal syndrome. That's called the abstinence syndrome. And that is a physiologic event. You got the drugs for medical reasons. The only way to prevent the withdrawal is to take more drug. But as is shown in Portugal, most people will tend to stretch a little bit into the mild leading edge of withdrawal and ultimately will taper themselves down if there's no other reason that they have to keep taking the meds.
Mm-hmm. I think we addressed this, but Sugarfoot says, we really need to know what you think about kratom. And I think you've already said that. Do you have any further comments on that?
Well, okay, kratom, the quick article I was able to look up says that there's a high potential for abuse and no current medical abuse or medical use. I don't have a lot of detailed knowledge. Let me look through here for a minute. It's in low doses, it's a stimulant. In large amounts, it's a sedative. And the DEA says it can lead to psychotic symptoms. It doesn't look like it does much that's useful in any large dose.
Okay. Chuck in Florida says all we really need to do is just smoke good weed. What do you think about that?
You know, there are some people who get relief from weed. A lot of them get better relief from CBD oil, which has no hallucinogenic effect. And the problem with CBD is that stuff is darned expensive. For no reason I can see. Mm-hmm. I think it's just trendy right now because people are using CBD for everything.
Mm-hmm. Strangely, a friend of mine said that they had a kind of a child that didn't like to get up, would argue with them all the time, and just various behavior negatives. And they start giving the girl about 7 CBD oil in a gummy bear looking thing, and like I said, it was a vitamin. And it said, now the child just gets up and says, "I'm ready to go. I'm ready to get dressed." And the arguments have stopped. Is that even possible?
Yeah, there. Part of the problem is because of the prohibition on marijuana that's been in place for, you know, basically a century plus. We have issues with lack of investigation because marijuana was listed as a Schedule 1 drug. It says no recognized use. The research basically didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And so it's only recently that there's been much research gone on with it. And so the answers just don't come readily. We'll find out more as we go along. I've read about CBD being used in autism spectrum disorder, and you know, it seems to work in some cases of autism and not in others. So, you know, there's a lot to find out. Mm-hmm. This is a very exciting part of medical research for the moment. Mm-hmm. By the way, I went back and looked at kratom a little longer. Kratom is from a tree, but there is a derivative from kratom. It's something called mitragynine pseudoendoxal, and it acts on the narcotic receptor, the morphine receptor, but without side effects like slowed breathing. So there is some promise on it. It doesn't seem to cause GI problems, you know, nausea, vomiting, constipation. Doesn't seem to cause physical dependence. So there'll be some research on that over time. But people who try to say, I'm going to get it from the plant and go for it, are fools.
I'll tell you what, I'm not going to take any CBD oil unless they put the high back in there. All right, here's a question. You know what I'm saying? Me want good buzz. Peter from Australia says, do you think that the current acceptable range for cholesterol on a blood test is correct?
Okay. Let me refer him to Peter Attia, PeterAttiaMD.com. Last name is spelled A-T-T-I-A. Have him search cholesterol. You will find 9 blog posts. Now, Peter Attia is a doctor. He specializes in biochemical stuff. Mm-hmm. Detailed work on cholesterol. There is only one test in the whole cholesterol spectrum that has any meaning whatever, and that is called LDL-P. There's an alternate name for it called APO-B, APO-B. If your doc is not measuring that, forget it. Cholesterol by itself, the measurement is meaningless. Cholesterol is an essential part of the membrane of every cell in your body. Mm-hmm. And there is a wide range of side effects from your statins, which reduce your cholesterol, ranging from muscle aches and pains to what my ISP had happened to him. He said, I was stuck on this stuff when I got off it. I realized I was dumb as a box of rocks while I was on it. You know, mm-hmm. Huge mental defect. ApoB or LDLP is actually a measurement of the number of cholesterol particles. And when that number is high, it does have some moderate predictive value against coronary disease and strokes. Moderate. But if you look at it and you look at people with low cholesterol, they're worse off. There is zero data. Let me say that again. There is zero data that lowering cholesterol by itself has any benefit. And there is good data that it increases harm. There is zero data that having high cholesterol by itself is harmful. You heard me right. Cholesterol by itself is a specific molecule. When we look at LDL and HDL, those are what we call complexes. They are various and sundry lipids, that's fats, proteins, and cholesterol all glommed together. So when you measure ApoB or LDLP, you're measuring the big fluffy ones, and you're measuring how many they are. That's the only test that's of any value. But if you go to a keto diet that is high fat, low carb, you will discover that all of your labs normalize. Mm-hmm. And you will not only lose a bunch of weight, you'll get off of all of your diabetes medicines. And remember that all of the type 2 diabetes, all the medicines for type 2 diabetes, all of them with the exception of metformin, it's the only exception right now. Jardiance, which is brand new, may, because it works in a completely different way. All of the other medicines make insulin work better, and insulin's job is to store fat, and by storing fat, you get type 2 diabetes.
Dr. Ted, in the first hour, you said you'd like a good steak, and in spite of AOC and the Democrats going around sniffing cow farts for methane content, I happen to like steaks too. Now, I also like steak and lobster. Now, some people say that lobster is a big, giant ocean roach. Is it okay to eat? And before you answer that, just remember I have my finger on the hang up button. So can a man enjoy steak and lobster, or he gotta give that up?
Oh no, enjoy it. Remember how the cycle of life works. Even if a lobster is here eating off of a dead fish, you know, it's been rotting, or you know, any of these other things. What happens when that lobster eats that food for him and digests it? It's no longer that putrid stuff. Mm-hmm. It is digested. It's broken down into its various amino acids and proteins. It's distributed into the lobster's body, and it's a different stuff. And lobster, good food.
okay. My finger just got off the hang-up button, so we're good. It was so close, man. Whew. All right. And I suppose shrimp's okay good, too, still?
Which?
Shrimp good?
Yeah, same story.
Yes. Yes. All right. Question.
How about scallops wrapped with bacon?
Oh, hell. You got to give me some of them,
Those
too,
are man. Good.
I'll see you in a minute, man. I got to go get some meat. are there any new drugs for Alzheimer's out there?
There is a lot of research for Alzheimer's, and all I can say is that there's nothing conclusive.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But if you want to talk about Alzheimer's for a moment, let's talk about Princess Pelosi.
Now we're getting somewhere.
I knew I'd get your attention with that one. Princess Pelosi, and I did this on one of my VidZet videos,
all right.
Her Health Revisited.
Ooh.
She has two things going on. You know, we've seen those funny twitches she has. Mm-hmm. She has a problem called dyskinesia tardive.
Yeah.
That is a side effect of medications. The problem is we can't tell what medications because there are so many varied medications can cause it. But they cause all of these funky twitches. And I show some videos of what that can look like. And she has some of them in her face.
Yeah.
And what she does is she gets Botox injections to keep those twitches from being so obvious.
Is she chewing her own Botox? Is that why she's always chewing something?
I don't – no, you don't chew Botox. It's injected.
Well, for her. All right, go ahead.
Yeah. At any rate, then she has a mixed pattern dementia in its early stages, and that is twofold. Now, remember that a Parkinson's dementia – I did the big thing on Hillary. Parkinson's dementia is manifested as difficulty in reasoning. She hasn't got that. What she has is a memory loss, which is typical of Alzheimer's and its variants. Remember, she was talking about President Bush when it was President Trump.
Right.
You know, many things. There have been bunches of those faux pas. And then the second part of what's going on is a vascular dementia, where she is having these very small infarcts. Little tiny areas of her brain are losing blood flow, and she has little baby strokes.
Wow.
Now, it's not the big stroke where your face goes, you know, mm-hmm. does that thing.
Mm-hmm.
These are little tiny ones. They're actually quite common in older people. And they can affect all sorts of bits in memory, movement, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my resources is a neuropsychiatrist who specializes in these things. And he says, absolutely no question. This is mixed pattern dementia, Alzheimer's, a little bit of Alzheimer's, a little bit of vascular.
Wow.
So she ain't all there. But we knew that anyway.
A little bit of stank. Well, hey, speaking of that, Mexico Unexplained asked the question, Dr. Ted, are you still monitoring Hillary's health? Is she getting worse?
Hillary doesn't put herself in the public eye often enough to have anything useful. Now, in August of 2016, I did my original video where I looked at the evidence that she has Parkinson's. And through the election cycle, I did a long series of videos pointing out bits and pieces along the way. And among them, and it's worth looking at, is the one I did, the Ground Zero story. And what happened on 9/11 that was blamed on dehydration but was actually a Parkinson freeze.
Wow.
I didn't have much else going on until she went to India, and she slipped on those steps when
right.
she's being held up already.
Stupidest thing ever.
And she was failing something called a retropulsive pull test as she walked down those steps. And once again, my neuropsychiatrist, who's Parkinson's is a big deal in his practice, he says, yep, that's what it is, no question. I did a piece there, and then she showed up in the middle of summer with this massive coat with this big ridge behind her back.
Yeah.
And that's almost certainly a back brace. Now, I think what happened was she was trying them out. One of the problems with Parkinson's is as it progresses, you develop what's called camptocormia. And camptocormia is a problem where you're unable to control your posture. Doesn't say you've got any arthritis, doesn't say you've got muscles that don't work. It's that the control mechanism in the brain doesn't work. And when you're upright, you end up hunched over so bad you're looking at your navel. Okay? And if you lay down on a bed, you lay out flat, no trouble. It's called camptocormia.
Oh.
And you will occasionally see Parkinson's patients shuffling along, looking at their shoe tops, hunched way over. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
One of the ways you can beat it, because it's not an arthritis and it's not a muscle problem, is you can wear a back brace that puts you upright like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what was going on is she was trying the back brace. Since then, she's been seen several times, and, you know, where you got a little extra fullness here from the front side of the back brace, and she has probably found her way to a brace that is not so obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But she still hides everything under lots of clothes. She doesn't want to reveal anything. That's part of her narcissism.
Yeah. Now, you know, some people have speculated that she has clones. Is that too much conspiracy for you, Dr. Ted?
That's a little too much.
Not for me.
Remember, there has not been any successful cloning of humans.
Mm-hmm.
And remember also when Dolly the sheep was cloned, the life expectancy of the sheep turned out to be very short. So cloning is so far remote from humans at this point to say it just there's no possibility. Now, there is a term, you may remember a movie titled Body Double.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You find someone who looks just like you, same height, everything else, a little bit of makeup, you have a double.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the island is based on that.
That's
too.
Within the realm of reason.
Have you looked into CRISPR technology yet?
Oh, CRISPR 9?
Yeah.
CRISPR 9 is a brilliant piece of technology which allows genetic splicing, mm-hmm. ideally for either production of valuable chemicals such as drugs by using bacteria as your substrate,
yeah.
or by patching in, for example, let's say you have someone with hemophilia. You could use CRISPR-9 to you inject them with a virus that's got the right stuff on it, and it transposes into the genome of that person the gene for making factor 8 in your clotting scheme. I mean, that kind of thing can be very effective. Mm-hmm. Well, and it's used in some of the genetically modified crops and
right.
so on.
And I can see the benefit of that, and I agree, it is brilliant. But what about those like the Chinese that are using it for mental or physical enhancements? Do you agree with that?
That's one of those things where I'd have to know a little more. One of the things I studied when I was in medical school is ethics. And are they doing it with or without consent? Are they doing it where information is withheld? Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of questions I can't answer.
Well, in the last couple of days, they've released more information about what they've done with I think twins. They used that technology. They said they were using it to prevent HIV/AIDS, but they said they ended up enhancing they believe it's going to enhance their mental and physical capability. It seems that eventually there's no ethics over there. There's nothing going to hold a line
right.
over there. They're going to create a whole new human.
Well, ultimately, they're probably going to try to use it to create a super soldier.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the thing that they would do. Plus, they would want to create the ultra brainiacs for technology development and for hacking.
Mm-hmm.
That would be where they would want to go. And I understand the motivation. The question is, what else comes with it?
Probably a chimera. And, you know, it's just like, to me, it's like every a Twilight Zone episode ever made. If you change mm-hmm. something bad's going to come out of it.
Well, it's called the law of unintended consequences.
Mm-hmm.
That's why when we do experiments, one of the things we try to do is to make sure that we look at the bad outcomes, so we say, why? Mm-hmm. What else can we do?
Mm-hmm. It seems to me they're going to let something out of the lab, and it's not going to be a good deal. Dr. Ted, I do appreciate you coming back on the Ed Sullivan broadcast.
Oh, it's such fun. Feel free to call me back.
Well, excellent. I'd like to have you back again. Any final thoughts about any of your videos? People can watch them or sign up for anything? Go ahead.
Well, all of my stuff is free. All of the videos are on YouTube. Just look for VidZette, short for Video Gazette, VidZette. And I've got close to 100 of them. And since then, because of the time involved in production of videos, I've gone to podcasting. And the VidZet podcasts are available on Liberated Syndication. That's vidzet.libsyn.com. And they're available on iTunes. So, and they're free. So I try once a week to get something useful, and you can listen to it in your car. And hopefully, as I say in my podcast, it's your home for careful consideration of our common concerns.
Okay, that's a very good tagline there. Dr. Ted, can we have you on again sometime?
Absolutely. Love to do it.
All right. I appreciate you coming on the show.
You have a good evening, and thank you.
All right, sir. Thank you very much. All right. That was Dr.